everybody. Welcome to Women in Retail Talks, the podcast where C-suite executive women in the retail space share their stories of professional growth, leadership development, personal journeys, and more. I'm Melissa Campanelli, the co-founder of the Women in Retail Leadership Circle, which is a membership-based community of executive women at leading retailers and brands. Joining me today is Lori Joffe, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at American Freight Furniture and Mattress, which is a retail furniture chain based in Ohio. Today, we're going to talk about Lori's career journey, her leadership tips, her thoughts on work-life integration, and more. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. So great to be here.
Yes, and Lori and I know each other. We chatted at a Women in Retail event that we had in Columbus last year. So it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, super excited.
So as I said in the opener, you're currently the CMO of American Freight Furniture and Mattress. So maybe you could just kind of, before we go anywhere, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about American Furniture, Freight and Mattress, and then sort of how you came to be the CMO.
Sure. So American Freight, we're a, like you said, furniture, mattress and appliance retailer. We have about just over 370 stores across the US. We sell furniture, mattresses, and primarily open box appliances targeted at that value conscious consumer. So that's really the market that we serve. Company has been around since 1994. So it's our 30th anniversary this year, and we're growing and super, super exciting times for the company. In terms of my career path and how I got to the CMO role here, so it's actually been a very untraditional path. So I started my career, believe it or not, in law, back in Israel, so very far away and in a completely different industry. I quickly realized that I was more interested in the work that I was doing for my clients and their businesses than the legal work I was actually doing for them. So I felt switching over to business was the right call. That's how I ended up in Chicago. I went to business school here at Booth, the University of Chicago, and was very focused on a marketing slash general management career path when coming here. I did a summer stint out in Biogen in Boston with a biotech company called Biogen IDEC. And I actually did a social media project for them. It was my first taste of digital marketing and I could never turn back. It was just perfect. Analytics and creativity all coming together. So I went back to school very focused on that path of digital and e-commerce. And I joined Sears after school. That's how I entered retail because they had a very untraditional leadership program, which was a perfect fit for me because I knew I could come to Sears and kind of chart my own path and pursue that digital path I was looking for. And I got exactly that. I joined the Sears outlet business at Sears, which was a very unique business unit at the time. It's the unit that sold open box appliances, very profitable and growing quickly. And I got to do a ton of digital projects for outlet, like launching their first ever email program and right coupon at the right time at point of sale. And then a year into that program, Sears Outlet got merged with another business of Sears, and we spun off into a separate entity called Sears Hometown and Outlet Stores. And in that company, I took over all of digital marketing, paid, owned, and loyalty. So it was great experience learning all about dig marketing end-to-end across all the channels in the weeds and out. Fantastic. And then that evolved. I was offered the opportunity to step up and lead e-commerce for the business. Later took on heavier responsibilities in BI and IT, kind of all synergy there. And then American Freight and Sears Outlet were merged, both purchased by Franchise Group, which is our parent company. In the new entity, I was chief digital officer, so I oversaw e-commerce, IT, and BI until April of last year when I was put back on my marketing motorcycle and moved back into a chief marketing officer role, so leading marketing and e-commerce for the business.
Wow, what a great career path. I didn't realize that you started out in the legal space. That's really interesting. And I do remember those Sears Hometown stores. Those were Those were great stores. So it makes a lot of sense that you would jump from there to American Freight. And I love how you were really, you know, honed into the digital. It sounds like a lot, you know, before digital was cool, it sounds like. So that's cool. You kind of picked up on that. You knew it was
always been cool to me, Melissa, always.
So that's great. So now you're at American Freight, you're the CMO. So, you know, what are a few of the initiatives you're working on right now that you're most excited about?
The best part about that question is that it's so difficult for me to choose because we have so many exciting things happening at the company and in the marketing and e-commerce space in particular. So really difficult, and that's a good thing, but I'll focus on a few. So number one, you know, like I said in the beginning, great company going through, you know, a great period of time with great potential for growth and major initiatives around that, which is fantastic, obviously, in the retail space. We're also a brand that has very, very distinctive and key differentiators. So really a marketer's dream, right? So in the furniture and mattress space, as well as appliances, we essentially sell everything and fulfill everything out of our stores, which lends itself to a take it home today model. So pretty much everything you see is what you get. You don't have to wait weeks to get your sofa. You can take it home with you that day, or we will deliver it to you same day. So great differentiator there. Like I said, we really focus on value and getting the best price and balance of price and quality to our customers, and what allows us to do that is that we have a very curated Goldilocks type assortment. So that's another key differentiator. And then of course, open box appliances. We are the biggest reseller of appliances in the U.S. So just on its own is a huge differentiator in the market. So these are obviously great things for the brand, great things for me in marketing. I will say, like I said, we merged the two brands, Sears Outlet and American Freight, merged right before COVID. Mm-hmm. And anybody listening could imagine how hectic that merge was at the timing that it happened. All mergers are hard, but you know, throw onto that lockdown and insanity in supply chain and everything that we went through, all of us during COVID and the pandemic. So really, I think last year was the first year we all just took a step back, deep breath, and started to lay the foundation for our future success. So a lot of initiatives got kicked off in 23. One of them was rethinking our brand and our experience. So we spent a lot of time really thinking about what we wanted to be, how we wanted to be positioned. We partnered with the Shipyard, which is a creative agency out of Columbus, and did a lot of work just listening to our customers and understanding why they wanted to shop us, what they were looking for, how they felt about their experience. And pulling all that together, we have now refreshed our brand. So we undertook a major brand refresh of both all of our marketing, our logo, positioning, messaging, tone, as well as the store experience, like what we were, how we were flowing product, the customer path within the store, how we were telling the story about open box appliances. We've changed our color palettes. And of course, that was all accompanied by a massive change to the website to match that all as well. So the brand refresh is a huge initiative, very cross-functional. While marketing's kind of leading the charge there, we are all in it as a company, and one that I am super excited about.
I'm just going to jump in because what you're talking about, I think a lot of retailers are going through, especially after COVID. I can't believe we're still talking about COVID, but it comes up in almost every conversation we have. It still has affected businesses in so many ways. But you did talk about that you're going through a major brand refresh. You're basically going through a transformation is how it sounds like to me. That's a really important topic for a lot of our listeners. And I know it can be difficult to get buy-in from team members, you know, when going through a transformation or a change of focus like this. I'd love to get some, you know, some tips or best practices around how you were able to get your team on board with these kinds of changes and challenges.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think a lot of buy-in issues really get resolved with fit, right? Like, I think that that word is so important and honestly underestimated. I'm extremely lucky to be in an environment today where we have truly unbelievable culture and an amazing team. So I really find myself less in a position where I have to get buy-in, and it's more a conversation. And that's really what you want to have happen. That's ideal. That said, throughout my career, definitely have been in positions where I've had to do that. Really, when you have to get the buy-in, important to remember that you need it bottom, across, and up, right? So the point really is getting everybody rowing in the same direction. That is so important. And what's worked for me is really just trying to understand the other side's point of view and motive and really play to that, right? So for example, showing all the data, right? And all the proof to that individual who really needs that to get convinced, right? So adapting what you're showing and how you're talking to what the person actually needs to hear and what they're looking for out of something that you're trying to get the buy-in from. And then a huge portion, I think, of buy-in is yourself learning how to take a step back, right? So for me, even when I'm 100% certain that I'm right, I'm not always right. Right? Retail's a team sport, and you have to learn how to compromise. And, you know, when you don't get that buy-in and somebody else, you know, just lock arms as a team and move forward, right? That's the key to winning.
Great all around. That was sort of leads into my next question, which is some leadership lessons. I mean, those were some pretty good leadership lessons right there. But anything else jumps to mind from all of your experience with Sears, even maybe from your law days? Like, you know, what are some, our listeners are always eager to hear leadership lessons to improve themselves.
Sure. Yeah, I am too, by the way. So I guess that's the first leadership lesson is stay curious, right, about yourself and your personal development, curious about others' ideas, about yours, about people, culture, technology, all of it. Curiosity is so critical. And if you're always learning, you're always growing, and that's going to just make you a better leader. I think that the second one, and it's critically important, is just to be yourself and to be who you are, right? So I think the things that aren't authentic, and we spoke a lot about authenticity at Whirl last year. And I think that it's so critically important, because things that aren't authentic just have a very short shelf life. So truly embrace your weaknesses. If the viewers could see me, they'd see I'm doing parentheses with my hands, because sometimes those weaknesses are also your greatest strengths. And really just be authentic and true to yourself. And then lastly, I think one of the biggest lessons for me is really business is all about people. At the end of the day, it's all about people. It's all about relationships. As a leader, you have an immense impact on people's lives, their paths, right? When you say something to your associate, they take it home with them. And that's something that you have to be really attuned to and remember, and not underestimate. And then not everyone needs to, in that token, not everyone should be led in the same way. So you need to adapt and make sure that you're adapting yourself to lead people in the way that they need to be led, because you're going to get the biggest impact that way.
Those are great. I love those. Those are life lessons and leadership lessons. I love when you said not being authentic has a short shelf life. I think that's so true. It's hard to keep up when you are not being your true self. So that's great. I love that. So I'm going to ask a question that we like to ask a lot of the folks that we interview. Can you talk about a time in your career when you had a failure or a setback or a challenge that actually turned around and was instrumental to your growth or to your career?
Yeah. And like I said, with the things I'm excited about, there are also so many setbacks, right? They happen a lot and it's often. And the key is really recovering from it and learning, Right. So a big one for me, and like I said, like I could go through a whole slew throughout my career and in different stages, but a big one for me was that we were having really major, major issues with a system implementation that I'd led. And there was so much work to do and so many problems to solve. It was just unbelievably overwhelming. For me, also personally, I'm a get it done type of person. Like I don't mess around. I like to get stuff done. I like to get it off my plate. I'm like, no, it actually is one of my strengths and something I'm known for. So it was a double whammy, like the situation of being in this overwhelming sea of problems. And it's really like one of the few times I feel for me that I had a really hard time. Like it was just the sinking feeling of failure. And I think that the key lessons I took from that is really, you know, learning how to not boil the ocean, right? Taking a step back, and then while when things are broken, like while you have to move with urgency to fix them, because if you don't, right, the urgency is really key. But while you have to do that, speed doesn't equal chaos, right? So taking time to figure out how to solve a problem is often going to get you to the final answer much faster and in a much better way. Right? So in situations since then, if I see anybody on my team struggling and like they feel like you can just tell, right, that they're overwhelmed with the magnitude of a problem or something that they're trying to solve, right, I always say kind of half jokingly, it's okay, it was broken up until now, right? So we're okay, right? So we're going to be okay. So it's just about kind of taking that step back and breaking problems out into their small pieces and manageable. And that was a huge lesson for me.
Great. Love that. Another question that we like to ask is how they sort of manage their time. And if you could share some work-life integration tips you swear by. I mean, I know you have a daughter. I know you're real busy. It's, you know, with your leadership role. So what are anything you can share would be super helpful.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I've got a 11-year-old daughter, almost 11, and an almost 16-year-old son, and a full-time, very demanding French bulldog, and obviously amazing husband. So life gets very, very busy. I think that the most important thing is to remember what matters most. Always, right? So for me, and like it's different for everybody, right? For me, the most important thing is my family and our health, right? So that's my beacon. And once you let that guide you, a lot just falls into place, right? So I think it's imperative to choose the company that really shares your values. And once you've done that, there's a lot less balancing that needs to happen, right? In addition, like I think that like just being self-accepting is very important. So I make sure to be present for my family as much as I possibly can, but I also don't feel guilty when I have to work until 10 one night or when I'm traveling a ton all of a sudden, because just getting consumed in that guilt is not productive for anyone. So really all of it is, I don't really think about work-life balance. I just think about balance, period. And I think that those two are key. So again, just find that company that fits you and your values and accept yourself.
Those are great tips. And it is, a lot of it is where is your choices, you know, and finding the companies that work for you, and then sort of all things fall into place. It's not even like you have to really work at it. So, I mean, obviously you have to work at it, but it's helpful if you're at the right place.
Yeah, and there's times it's about like it's all about flexibility. There's times where it's going to be crazy and you're not going to get to prioritize your family. Right. It's just not going to happen, right? But in the long term, right, we're all playing a long-term game here. Just let those things that matter to you the most guide you.
Right, definitely. So in closing, I was going to say it's the new year, but it's actually almost spring over here in New York. but there's still quite a lot of 2024 left. So, you know, what are some goals you have for yourself personally and professionally right now, or as we round out the year, maybe for 2024 in general?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, professionally, I want us to achieve everything that we've set out to do, and it's a lot. So landing all these planes successfully is obviously a huge goal. Another big goal for me is my team and making sure that they're happy and developing and progressing. So just taking care of my people. So I'd say, like, professionally, those are probably the two biggest. And I guess for me personally and professionally, it's about my growth and learning, and, you know, that learning is super important. On a totally personal level, I hope that I get to spend all the critical moments with the people that matter most to me, and that I get to spend a lot of time with my family, and that we all stay healthy and happy.
Love it. Well, Lori, it was so great chatting with you today. That's all we have time for, but I really feel like I got to learn a lot about you and about your philosophy, your leadership philosophy. And thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more information on this podcast, please go to womeninretail.com/podcasts for show notes. Women in Retail Talks is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Make sure to subscribe on our podcast channel page as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a few moments to rate and review our show. Lastly, if you're a female retail leader interested in joining our community at Women in Retail Leadership Circle, visit womeninretail.com/apply. Thanks, and until next time, this has been Women in Retail Talks.